Welcome to Community Conversations, a monthly program on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson, and this evening we'll be talking about the One River, Many Stories project. It started as a way to grieve and honor a respected journalist in our community. It's grown to be a project involving more disparate people and groups than anyone could imagine. It's the One River, Many Stories project. Let's meet our guests.
I'm John Hatcher. I teach journalism here at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and I'm a member of the One River, Many Stories grant team.
I'm Chris Eilers. I'm the executive director of the St. Louis River Alliance.
I'm Paul Lundgren. I'm the head honcho of Perfect Duluth Day and one of the grant team members for One River, Many Stories.
Paul, you just wrote a beautiful essay about how the idea for One River, Many Stories came about, and I'd really like you to tell that story now.
It was September 2014. I was at the North Pole Bar. Mike Simonson, who was a longtime regional correspondent for Wisconsin Public Radio at KUWS. He was also a journalism teacher at UWS at the time I was a student in the early 90s. And Mike would always or frequently get together people in the journalism industry. We'd meet at the North Pole Bar. He called it the Raleigh Street Press Club, North Pole being on Raleigh Street. And we, you know, everybody gets together and crabs about their editor or, you know, lots of gossip about the industry and have a few drinks. And as the meeting kind of wound down and people started disappearing, it was just Mike and I and John Ellis from Channel 10, and we were talking and kind of reminiscing about old times. And Mike started talking about that he was going to be retiring soon, and he wanted to, in his retirement, work on a documentary about the St. Louis River. And the thought of that just blew my mind right away because it's such a huge topic, the whole history of the river and how many things are going on with the river right now in terms of cleanup projects. I was just astounded by it. But I was also kind of surprised that Mike was planning to take on a giant project like that for fun. But on the other hand, also not so surprised just by the kind of workhorse he was for so long at KUWS. So within about 2 weeks of that, Mike died. And, you know, it was a tough thing for a lot of us to go through, but it also, I kept thinking about, well, here's this St. Louis River documentary that's never going to happen. And John Hatcher, who is seated to my left and we'll be talking to more here as we go along, John had at this around this same time had an idea for a Duluth Media Summit, and he called together members of the media, and there were two guest speakers, but it was not connected at all to any to Mike Simonson or any of his ideas. But within days of the media summit, John and I sat down for coffee, and John asked me if I had any ideas for what might be a project that could get the local media to collaborate in some way, and immediately I thought of the St. Louis River. So within 4 days of that, I think it was, John had already written a grant, and within a few months of that, the grant was accepted, and off we go.
The piece that was published on Perfect Duluth Day, talking about Mike Simonson, I wrote a piece where I tried to just sort of put this all down on some kind of a timeline, how we got to this place. And I lead that off by saying it's all Paul Lundgren's fault. And it really did begin, well, he can even tell you the date, but it really began with coffee. Paul and I would just get together and we'd have some coffee and we'd just kind of talk about interns, but we enjoyed it, I think, and talked about the media landscape, about where journalism was going, talked about his project at Perfect Duluth Day, which is just this amazing example of citizen journalism, and it really did all start with a cup of coffee a couple of years ago, and so we kind of ruined just getting together from coffee by actually proposing this idea, and the idea for me is really this desire to have a way for journalists in this region to get together. You know, I'd been turned on. I'd been to a bunch of different conferences and been really excited by some examples, places like Portland, Oregon, and Charlotte, North Carolina, where news organizations, you know, from the biggest, fanciest newspaper, the TV stations, the radio stations, to the local bloggers, to anybody who wants to participate, you know, really finding ways to work together to learn how to play together. And that kind of connected media ecosystem is just – it's great for an audience. It's great for a community because, you know, I might be a big newspaper, but I don't have the resources I used to have. And so I can't go out and cover that little neighborhood community event. But if somebody else is writing about it and I can point my audience towards that news, that's just great. That's just a great connection for a community. So we were looking for a way to try and figure out how media in this area could play together more and looking for an opportunity to do that, but really hadn't settled on an answer.
Let me play devil's advocate just for just one moment, because I'm excited about this project too. But I know that there are journalists and people that say, you know, I went to school, I trained, I worked, I learned my craft. You know, now we have citizen journalists. What's next? Citizen neurosurgeons? You're not trained to be a journalist. You shouldn't be presenting yourself as a journalist. And since your job is training journalists, what's your take on that?
I think it's one of the great questions. And you know, one of the things we did, and I should mention that, and I want to recognize all the people on our team here in a second. But, you know, one of the things we did is we started fishing around for the idea of media playing together is went out and talked to journalists in the community, you know, and talked to, you know, the editors over at the Duluth News Tribune, talked to some longtime reporters there, talked to Paul Lundgren, talked to people at the TV stations, but then also talked to just, I guess, what you'd call citizen journalists, like a woman who runs a sweet little publication called Look at Lakeside. And I called her and said I wanted to talk to area journalists, and she said, "Why are you calling me? You know, I'm not a journalist. I put out this little newsletter." And I said, "Well, tell me why you do it and what you do." And she says, "Well, I just think it's important that people know what's happening in their neighborhood, in their community. I like to find stories about people, especially the older generation, and talk about what their, you know, who, their stories and their memories of this community. I like to tell the history of this place. I like to keep people up to date on what's going on as far as new businesses, comings and goings." And I said, "Isn't that journalism?" And she thought, "I guess it might be, you know." So I think that, yes, old school journalists like myself, you know, trained to do a vocation, are always going to have concerns about credibility, reliability. But I think we need to start recognizing that citizens, people out in the community, they have perspectives to offer that we can't find from official sources, that we can't find from people who have titles next to their names. And they can offer some insight into our communities that are pretty powerful.
Yeah. And we can't ignore the reality that the average person now has access to all of these tools that allow them to break news. So essentially anyone is a minor form of a journalist. So from the perspective of being in a medium to large media organization, there's nothing you can do to stop that. So your only reaction can be to crab about it and try to make them feel like they're terrible people. Or you can try to lift them up, teach them skills, and hope that they will better serve their community with that power that's technology has given them.
I think just two quick points. One, I think it's important to remember that one thing we're not trying to do with this project is tell any news organization, journalist, storyteller of any kind how to do their work. We really felt like the only way this is going to work is to say, hey, let's all at least agree we're going to do some storytelling about one topic, the St. Louis River and its communities, its history, its people. How each news organization chooses to tell those stories is completely up to them. What we learned right away is that if we don't respect the autonomy of the news organizations and their own professional ethics about how to do their work, we'll fail. But the other thing to remember is you don't need a license in the United States to be a journalist, right? Anybody can be a journalist. You don't have – it's not like an engineer. It's not like a doctor. It's not like a profession of that type. Anybody can be a journalist.
You're listening to Community Conversations on KUMD. We're talking about the One River, Many Stories project this evening, and our guests in the studio are John Hatcher, journalism professor at UMD and part of the grant team, Chris Eilers, executive director of the St. Louis River Alliance, and Paul Lundgren, the mastermind behind Perfect Duluth Day, part of the grant team, and a member of the Raleigh Street Press Club.
How did you feel, Chris, as the executive director of the St. Louis River Alliance, when I'm guessing John or Paul or somebody came to you and said, hey, we're going to do this huge community-wide journalistic effort, and it's all going to be about the river?
I was really excited to hear that there was going to be a vehicle or a medium for all of these many voices that we've been a part of for so many years. And I was really excited to hear that some of those voices would be heard maybe a little bit louder, or there might be a little bit different perspectives than what I've heard, some stories that I have not heard. So always when it's about the St. Louis River, I'm always excited to hear something to get some visibility of the river and how great it's becoming and the momentum that's behind all of that. A lot of people are aware of the condition that the river has been in the last 100 years, and but new people coming to the community aren't aware of some of those issues. So some of these stories are really important in getting a broad perspective as we move forward into new times here, where we're realizing some benefits of a cleaner river and capturing some of that the excitement and momentum as we go forward here. It's very important for the support and for stewardship building for the river, which is what we're all about. We're still trying to capture some of those stories, and I'm still sitting down and listening to our members' stories. And now this project will help kind of fill out all of those gaps and add so much richness to the story of the river. And it also brings such a personal quality. I mean, I see water as a living source, really not just a thing that flows through an area, but as a living being, really. And so the voices of so many people who have lived on the river and experienced their childhoods, experienced some good things and bad things on the river, brings that river to life in our community and brings attention to something that a lot of people have not really thought about. They're focused on Lake Superior, which is a lot of the reason why a lot of us are here, too, is the river, and that this river flows into the estuary, which flows into Lake Superior. So all of those voices are just so important. And our organization has, our mission is the voice of the river. So all of these many voices coming together kind of is starting to put together a lot of pieces of the puzzle for me, sitting from my desk. So it's very important.
First, you get the word that there's going to be, again, this big multiple-month, multiple-journalist, community-wide emphasis on the river. And then the St. Louis River cleanup gets included in the governor's water quality initiative. And $12.7 million to the MPCA for the cleanup of the St. Louis River, if I'm reading these numbers correctly.
That's correct.
And then that triggers another $47.5 million to clean up the river?
Yeah, the total ask over the next couple of years will be about $25 million, and that will kick in a 65% match from federal dollars. For 20 years, a lot of this work has been happening, people sitting around the table talking about giving stories, talking about things that were important to them, issues that they saw happening, and concerns that they had, and also the good part of, living on the river or being a community on the river. And so this package that the governor just announced the other day is the culmination of a lot of years of work. And in recent years, the St. Louis River Alliance has continued to try to connect people with the river through different events. But the focal point was always kind of, there's so many projects happening in the river. So it was really hard to explain that to the community, to try to raise awareness. It's a very complicated issue. There's a lot of projects happening. There's a lot of agencies involved and a lot of different companies involved, actually, and a lot of different partners from, you know, from state, federal, and the tribal, you know, tribal. And so all the work that people did is it. You can start to see some of the benefits now, which is why the visibility of this project is really important. Hearing people's voices is really important. You can feel the momentum building here in Duluth, and we've been saying it for about a year now, where we're starting to see some of those benefits. That when we heard about the 10 contaminated sediment sites that have been identified in the estuary, the board and I sat down and we talked about what our role should be in trying to secure some of that state money. And it made perfect sense for us to take the lead on building a coalition of support, hiring a government relations consultant, and trying to secure the funds from the state bonding to trigger the federal match so that we can finally get this the largest bit of contamination cleaned up in the estuary. This is the largest cleanup project that's happened since the 1970s, really. It's very significant. It's not an accident that people are excited about the river, because there's been so much work done on it and so many people responsible for pushing that forward.
Chris, is this money a given now?
No, it is not a given.
So it's not exact. We're not quite celebrating. Ooh, look at the money.
We're celebrating and thanking the governor for his support of this project. It's a top priority for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and they are the lead. They are the lead state agency for the area of concern. So, securing the money will go to them. This doesn't go to the St. Louis River Alliance. It goes to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for them to administer towards the projects that have been identified. It's not a given. Yesterday I was at the Capitol with Judy Erickson, who we hired for our government relations consultant, working with some senators on our strategies. A bill will be crafted and introduced in the House and the Senate, and that will move through the legislative process then. And the part that's exciting is that we know that we have the governor's support. It holds more weight. It's a lot of people are supporting this project. There really hasn't been any opposition at all. So, I mean, we're hoping that things go through without too many complications. But again, the bonding money is highly competitive. And so we're in the thick of it, and we are working out our strategies. There'll be some announcements made here in the next couple of weeks, what some of that strategy is. But no, it is not a given. My job has been to raise a coalition of support in the community as well as statewide. This is a statewide issue. This estuary, you know, is very significant for the entire state. It flows into Lake Superior, and there's a lot of tourism dollars here. There is a lot of industry here in the harbor. So those dollars really affect the entire state. So that is my job, has been to raise a coalition of support, both by having businesses sign a letter of support or adopt a resolution, but also to raise some money to help pay for this initiative and to help build the sustainability of our organization. We're member based. Our job is to engage the entire community as well as statewide on this project. This is a perfect place for people to come together. You know, some of our events that we've had recently, we had a reception at Zeitgeist, and you look around the room and we've got people who wouldn't normally sit in the same room coming together over this issue. And that's why this is important. That's where the magic is. This is something that the entire community can come together on, and not just in Duluth, but in Superior, even though this is a Minnesota responsibility to clean up those contaminated sediment sites. This impacts the entire Twin Ports area as well as the rest of the state. This is bringing in $73 million into the community. So it's this is such a big picture. And sitting at my desk for the last, you know, I've been with the St. Louis River Alliance for 5 years now, and I was there, or for 4 years, I'm sorry, as a project manager. And So many people come in the office, or they call us. We're the people they call when they see some stuff on the river that they don't know who to call. So we try to connect them with the right resources. But I have people stopping in telling me, you know, when I worked at the railroad, you know, this is what I saw and this is what happened. And I remember, you know, there's so many stories. And that's why this is so perfect to be happening right now. But it's also not an accident, right? It's momentum being built and the excitement of the possibility of what can really happen here in this area because of a cleaner river. And that's the energy we're feeling, and we're feeling it from all parts of the community.
You're listening to Community Conversations on KUMD. We're talking about the One River, Many Stories project this evening, and our guests in the studio are John Hatcher, journalism professor at UMD and part of the grant team, Chris Eilers, executive director of the St. Louis River Alliance, and Paul Lundgren, the mastermind behind Perfect Duluth Day, part of the grant team, and a member of the Raleigh Street Press Club.
If there were cranes and barges from the MPCA in the harbor doing the work, would it make the project more exciting?
Yes, that action will all be visually exciting and newsworthy and headline-worthy. But I would argue that we already have all those things, and they're in the narratives and the stories of the individuals who have worked for so long to get to this place, right? This has been a slow, steady progression. You know, that we're already seeing these stories, that people are already starting to share with us the stories about the river and the stories. They're already starting to take us up on that challenge of One River, Many Stories. And if you go to our website, One River MN, you can see on our front page the collection of stories, including some from the St. Louis River Alliance, you know, that we're starting to assemble. And so the project, you know, the sharing of these stories has already started. And yes, we hope something really exciting happens in April, but it won't end there. You know, we've already heard from other people talking about projects they want to do that will carry over. I know there's been some discussion of maybe, I'll let Paul speak to the idea of maybe some book-length projects and things like that, you know, that might happen afterward. So yes, we'll see this spike and hopefully kind of a celebration in April, but that's just, you know, that's just a marker along the way. To a story that began a long time ago and will continue long after this. There's one community I think that's important to also acknowledge here. You talked about focusing a community. You mentioned Minnesota and Superior and of course Wisconsin. For me, one of the most exciting groups to welcome in this discussion, because they've been having it long since any of us were here, is the Native American community in this region. And I think one of the things we want to do is to recognize that historically marginalized groups like the Native American community have been thinking and talking and telling stories about the river since long before it was called the St. Louis River, and that they have their own incredible history of storytelling and journalists and storytellers that we want to make sure are featured prominently in this project from day one.
So let's talk about where do we go from here and all of the many, many, many different people and groups and factions that are going to benefit.
We got this grant. It's a Knight Foundation fund from the Duluth Superior Area Community Foundation, and we're just so grateful for them. They asked, you know, they helped us with the grant, but they also helped us by asking some really hard questions about how is this going to come to fruition? How will you know you've achieved it when you think you have? You know, how will citizens, for them, it's crucial that this project translates into greater citizen engagement in their own communities. And that's for them is a huge piece of the puzzle. And so we started to think about, well, how will we do this? You know, if our goal is to, yes, focus on an issue where there's already a lot of community buzz, but, you know, our other kind of ulterior motive is to build community among area journalists, right? And to be really inclusive into who uses that term journalist. And I sometimes use journalist and storyteller, you know, interchangeably. And we started to think about ways to do that. And, of course, we're going to use social media, and we've already begun using that. And we have our hashtag OneRiverMN, and we have our Facebook and our Instagram and our Twitter. You know, so that's always a big part of any media campaign these days, is to start a conversation with the community. But then we also thought we want to maybe start some kind of a listserv, a way for journalists to interact, to talk to one another. But we also recognize that in this day and age, news organizations, They're so incredibly busy and a lot of times don't have time to step back from their work and just talk about how can we do our work better. Well, one of the things we recognize is that Duluth has just this amazing richness of talent, you know, and storytellers. So we don't need to hire experts from outside to come in and teach us how to do our craft better. More, we just need to recognize that we've got this local talent and to invite these people to come talk and share about how they do their work. So we identified this series of skill sessions that we're going to try and do between now and April, where we hope both journalists and citizens will come and learn from one another and get excited about how to do journalism and do it well. One of the things we hope to do is kind of, I don't know if raise the bar is the right word, but agree on some basic ethical tenets to storytelling, to credibility, to things like identifying sources, to be certain of information when you report it. There may be some basic kind of ethical guidelines that we who tell stories in this community, you know, can agree on.
In addition to being an opportunity to collaborate, this is also an opportunity to compete. It's an opportunity for any news organization in town to say, we're going to do the best St. Louis River stories in this market during the month of April, and we're going to stand out above everyone else. So it's an opportunity to collaborate and compete. I think it's important to keep that in mind.
Are journalists in this town competitive?
Oh, no. They all, I mean, they're Minnesotans, right? They all just get along nicely. And are you serious? Oh, yeah, they're competitive. Of course they are. I mean, part of what wires people to want to be journalists is, on some level, the excitement of breaking news, right? The excitement of being the first with information out to the community. And largely, you can argue that level of competition is good for us, the audience, right? You know, we want our journalists to be what? Tenacious. You know, the old school way of referring to journalists is watchdogs. You know, they're keeping a lookout on the world for us. We want to feel like they are looking out, making sure our public officials are doing their work and things like that. There's a lot of people who think these days journalists need to be more open about what they're working on, so that they can get the community to help them, you know, to say, hey, we're working on a story about this. What do you know about it? What information do you have? And so it's becoming journalism more as a conversation. But I don't think you want to lose all of that competitiveness. It's almost like, I don't know, an art show. It's like everybody's, you know, everybody knows the theme of the exhibit. But we'll all be looking at one another's work to see, wow, that's pretty good. One of the things we do hope to do, by the way, is at the end of it all, probably in May, to have kind of a big community celebration of the stories. And, you know, we've joked around about the idea of it could almost be like the local Emmys or something like that, where we can, you know, but it's certainly a showcasing of the work that's been produced and a celebration of the stories that have been told. For me, my hope is that it really will build a stronger alliance or a connection between area journalists, and that when we're done, journalists will say to us, cool, what are we doing next year? You know, this will build community among area journalists. Selfishly, I want that for my students, you know, that they will be more connected with the local area storytellers. But Jennifer Moore, Chris Julin, Emily Havoc, and Paul Lundgren each had their own answer to that question. And what I liked was each person's answer was unique and different.
Yeah, and I'm going to present a different answer now than I did then. And I'm kind of making it up as I go along. It's based on something Chris said earlier, the phrase, it's all about the water, popped out at me, and it got me to thinking, you know, we think a lot, we've tended to think a lot about Lake Superior being the huge identifier for Duluth. And for a brief part of my life, I lived in the Central Hillside and would walk on the lake walk. That's what you do when you're in that part of town. But most of my life, I've lived in West Duluth, and I walk on the Western Waterfront Trail along the St. Louis River. It's all about the water.
That's right. It is all about the water, and I'm just excited about this project. My hope, I know that this is happening, when people tell stories, it brings things to life. How do you create stewards? How do you get people to want to take care of something? You get to know somebody, and then you care for that person. That person is the river. when you talk about the river, you tell stories, it brings the river to life, and you want to take care of it. I'm hoping that the collective voice of all of those stories will bring the river to life for our whole community. That's my hope. It is about the water, and this water runs into Lake Superior, but the river stands on its own, and the momentum that's being built and the work that's being done on it will create its own legacy here.
Community Conversations is a monthly program here on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson. Thanks to our guests, John Hatcher, journalism professor at UMD and part of the grant team, Chris Eilers, executive director of the St. Louis River Alliance, and Paul Lundgren, the mastermind behind Perfect Duluth Day, part of the grant team, and a member of the Raleigh Street Press Club. Community Conversations is produced by Lisa Johnson and funded by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.